Chapter 19. The sense of freedom that sailing the Amalfi Coast engendered is in stark juxtaposition to the restrictive lifestyle that March 2020 brought upon us all, also known as the first lockdown, the one that we thought was going to be the only lockdown. I wrote this piece during that time. It chronicles a day in our lives and the events of that day, which then just basically repeated themselves for months. We were in London. My wife, Felicity, and I were sequestered there with our two small children, a boy, 5, and a girl, 2, my 3 older children, a girl, 18, and boy-girl twins, 20, and a girlfriend of theirs from university who was unable to get to her parents overseas. Cramming all of these people with differing personalities, ages, needs, wants, etc., in a house for 6 weeks created for an interesting dynamic. For the most part, things went very well, meaning no one murdered anyone. At first, I had grand plans for what we might do to pass the time in convivial and entertaining ways. I thought perhaps a rotating schedule of cooks for the nightly meal, followed by movies, games, or Bordeaux-fueled charades by the fire. Things didn't quite work out that way. Instead, here's what our typical lockdown day looked like with the absence of our nanny and our weekly cleaning lady. 7 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. Within moments of Felicity's and my awakening, our 5-year-old is in our room. It's not clear how he knows we're awake. For all we know, he has a monitor like the one we use to listen to his 2-year-old sister. He waltzes over to my wife's side of the bed, completely ignoring me as usual, and begins to chat with her about nothing and everything. His usual topic is dragons, as he is obsessed with the wonderful book series How to Train Your Dragon, and its various cinematic spin-offs. Felicity and I head to the bathroom, and he follows, and perches himself on the bidet to regale us with plot points from the novels and observations about the seemingly endless variety of dragons and their specific attributes. He will carry on this way more or less until sunset. After dressing, we head to his sister's room, where she has been singing, quote-unquote, in her crib, and perusing the shredded remains of her extensive Peppa Pig book collection. When she sees us enter, she inevitably covers her face with a book and pretends to be asleep. She thinks this is funny. She is right. I change her nappy, and she kicks me in the groin a few times for my trouble. We all head downstairs for breakfast. For me, this consists of a double espresso, orange juice, and a bowl of cereal with banana and almond milk. I also choke down a handful of vitamins, including D3, K2, C, B12, curcumin powder, and joint supplements, so my knees don't crack like a melting glacier every time I bend down to pick up a rogue Lego block. Felicity has her tea, and the children have either toast, cereal, fruit, the occasional egg, or whatever else their little hearts desire. Most of their food ends up on the floor anyway. This precipitates my first deep clean of the day. 8 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. I tidy up their mess, empty the dishwashers, yes, we have 2, scour the counters, wipe down the cabinets and their handles, and organize the contents of the fridge, discarding anything past its due date. I also sweep the floor, but after summoning considerable willpower, I decide to delay the mopping for after lunch. As you might have gleaned, I am a very tidy person. I actually like to clean, as I find it soothing. But I have gone a bit above and beyond during lockdown. The other day it occurred to me that I might be able to strap a vacuum to my back like a leaf blower so that it could be with me at all times. Not a good sign. 8:45 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. Felicity and I do an online workout with a friend of ours who's a Pilates teacher. The night before, we asked one of the older children to come down this morning and babysit. Seconds before the class begins, the bleary-eyed designee emerges, face still swollen from sleep, and grunts a good morning as we flee into the living room for a fitness-filled escape from reality. During this time, I think about what we might cook that evening for 8 people yet again. 9:45 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. When the session ends, Felicity and I go over what food items need to be restocked. With 4 people between the ages of 18 and 20, the amount of food, beer, and wine that is consumed is staggering. If there is a shortage of avocados at the local stores, it's because we've eaten them all. If there's no Kerrygold butter left in the UK, it's because either it's in our freezer or we ate it. All of it. Just fucking ate it. Probably without even spreading it on anything. I saw a neighbor hungrily eyeing our cat yesterday, and it occurred to me that the woman probably hadn't eaten meat in a week, because my gluttonous family devoured all of the beef, lamb, veal, chicken, oxtail, pork, rabbit, and game in southwest London. Still gasping for breath from an unnecessarily grueling workout, I rummaged through the fridge. Given our short supplies, I decided to make something simple tonight, pasta a la norma and sautéed lamb chops. I reckoned that these two dishes should satisfy everyone's palate and nutritional needs, although I know that my 18-year-old daughter will only eat the pasta dish as she is now a vegetarian. What timing? Pasta a la norma. Serves four. Two large garlic cloves, halved. Extra virgin olive oil. Two large eggplants, diced. Kosher salt. 5 cups marinara sauce. 1 pound pasta, rigatoni, tzatziki, or a thick spaghetti. A handful of basil, roughly chopped. A handful of grated ricotta salata or pecorino. In a very large frying pan, fry the garlic in a glug of oil over low heat for about 2 minutes. Add the eggplants, raise the heat to medium, and cook for about 15 minutes until slightly golden. Salt to taste. Add the marinara sauce and cook for about 5 minutes more. Cook the pasta and drain, reserving half a cup of the water. Stir the reserved pasta water into the pan mixture and sprinkle with the basil. Measure 4 cups of the sauce and put it in a serving bowl. Add the drained pasta to the pan with the remainder of the sauce and gently stir it all together. Sprinkle with grated ricotta salata or pecorino and serve with the extra sauce on the side. 10:30 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. After doing some homeschooling with the 5-year-old, Felicity heads upstairs to shower and begin her remote workday from our bedroom. She is a literary agent and carries out her endless meetings via Zoom. With the exception of finishing voiceover work remotely from my studio for a CNN series I recently completed, I have very little to do these days as film and TV production have shut down. As far as I know, this has never happened since somebody first called action over 100 years ago. So I do the laundry and play with the kids, often made-up games like Mean King, where I affect a very posh British accent and they come to me to pay their taxes and then steal them back when I take a nap. I like this game because I get to sit on my throne, an Aeroceranin womb chair, the most comfortable seating device ever designed. I try to drag the game out for as long as possible so I don't have to get up, but the 2-year-old is beginning to reek, and I realize I have been neglectful in my nappy-changing duties. When this wrestling match has ended and she has accused everyone in the house of pooping besides herself, I change both children out of their pajamas and into the outfit of the day. Although the 5-year-old can dress himself, today he insists he is incapable of doing so. I therefore talk him through each stage while the 2-year-old hurtles through the room, screaming with laughter and jeering at me. I finally catch her, body slam her to the sofa, and stuff her into the first of many outfits of the day, like sausage meat into a casing. My glasses are nowhere to be found, and therefore I can't see well enough to work the minuscule buttons on children's clothing, so I leave part of her outfit undone, hoping Felicity won't notice. She doesn't, but I do, and it plagues me for the rest of the day. 11 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. Once the children are dressed, I usher them into the garden where they bounce on the trampoline and beg me to allow them to play with the hose. Sometimes I will bounce or wrestle with them for a bit, and this makes them very happy. It has the same effect on me as well. After a while, I finally relent and allow them some water play with a hose, buckets, and a miniature plastic kitchen set. With the kids sufficiently distracted, I head inside and begin cooking, keeping an eye on them from the kitchen window. I first decide to make chicken stock with leftover carcasses. Simple chicken stock. 1 chicken carcass without meat and 1 whole chicken without breast meat, or 2 of either one. 10 mixed peppercorns. 1 medium yellow onion, skin on, cut in half. 1 medium red onion, skin on, cut in half. 2 garlic cloves, skin on. 2 celery stalks, quartered. 2 carrots, quartered. 1 handful of parsley. 2 bay leaves, salt. 1 sprig rosemary, 2 sprigs thyme. If you are using a whole chicken, cut it in pieces at the leg joints. Put the carcass and the chicken pieces into a stock pot and cover it with water. Bring to a boil and skim off the scum that rises to the top. Add the other ingredients and simmer, partially covered, for as long as you want, but at least 2 hours. Strain through a sieve into some vessel and allow to cool, then refrigerate, or divide among freezer bags and freeze. 12:15 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. The older generation of children awakens. They enter the kitchen and make quick work of an entire loaf of bread, 2 pints of cherry tomatoes, 4 avocados, 6 eggs, 2 pints of blueberries, 4 bananas, 20 rashers of bacon, 1 liter of almond milk, 6 Nespresso pods, and 1 liter of orange juice before retreating to the TV room or their bedrooms, where they tell me they are doing their schoolwork. I believe them, even if I don't. Felicity comes down and serves the little one's lunch after I have changed their waterlogged clothes. I am off to clean a bathroom or two, do some more laundry, or vacuum something that I just vacuumed 3 hours before. 1:45 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Felicity puts the 2-year-old down for her nap. The 5-year-old listens to his audiobook, and I make marinara and prep the eggplant for the pasta alla norma. 3 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. When all is prepped and the kitchen is cleaned once again, it is my intention to write something, read, or catch up on emails. Instead, I pick up the New York Times crossword puzzle to clear my head and promptly fall asleep. 3:30 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. I waken with spittle on my chin and too few clues answered. Glancing at my watch, I rush upstairs to awaken the 2-year-old from her nap. When I arrive, Felicity is already changing her while doing a conference call. I know she wants to give me a dirty look, but she's a much better person than that. I take the child, finish the diapering, redress her, and head downstairs. I give both children a snack, and we play together in the garden. We bounce on the trampoline, do chalk drawings on the patio, look for slugs, and maybe do some painting. It is at once lovely and exhausting. We are laughing one moment, and the next someone is weeping, and I am adjudicating, saying things like, "Let her have it for a few minutes, and then you can have it." "What's a few?" "A few is 3. 3 minutes?" "Yes, 3 minutes, and then you can have it." "Will you time it?" "Yes, I will time it." I do indeed time it, but the 2-year-old screams when whatever object they both covet gets taken away from her. Play begins anew, but then the spat starts all over again. 4:30 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. I look at my watch and will it to be 5 p.m., cocktail time. 4:45 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. I acquiesce and make a Negroni. It is said that Negronis are like breasts. 1 is not enough, 2 is perfect, and 3 is just too many. Today I am tempted to see what happens if I drink 4. 5 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. The older children have now come downstairs to eat an entire meal before I make them an entire meal for dinner. Thankfully, as penance, 2 of them take the little ones up for their bath. Felicity enters the kitchen and begs for a Negroni. I gladly make her one, as I hate to drink alone, although I have been known to make near daily exceptions. And anyway, 1 is never really drinking alone. Someone else is always drinking somewhere. We prepare the children's dinner, lamb chops, rice, and string beans. I switch to white wine and thank Christ it's evening. Lamb chops. Serves 4 adults. A glug of extra virgin olive oil, 3 garlic cloves, halved, 10 to 12 lamb chops salted an hour before using, white wine, 1 teaspoon fresh rosemary leaves, 1 teaspoon fresh thyme leaves. In a large cast iron pan, splash in a tiny bit of the oil and add the garlic. Cook over a low heat for about 3 minutes. Remove and set aside. Raise the heat to medium-high and sear the lamb chops until they are browned, 2 to 3 minutes on each side. You may do this in 2 batches. Remove the chops from the pan and set them aside on a platter. Add a splash of white wine to the pan and perhaps a little water and deglaze. Return the garlic to the pan along with the herbs. Cook for maybe 1 minute. Pour over the lamb chops and tent with foil for 5 minutes before serving. 6 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. The little ones eat their meal, which at times requires us to coax, plead, or threaten spewing old chestnuts such as, "There will be no dessert for you, young man," and, "Do you think dragons leave food on their plates?" Dragons don't use plates. I know they don't use plates. I know that. I'm just saying, could you please just finish it? After their meal is eaten, sort of, the little ones are allowed to watch a bit of television. Dragons for him, Peppa Pig for her. There is no question that my wife and I, along with many parents, wish the creators of that irritating animated swine a slow death, but they are so rich they have probably purchased immortality. And yet, at the same time, said pig allows us respite for a half an hour or so every day. May God bless those creators. While the little kids are immersed, I begin to make culinary preparations for the next sitting. TV time has ended, and we usher the little ones to bed. As usual, the two-year-old is screaming between gulps of her bottle because she has had to leave her beloved pink porcine pal. After settling her into her cot, we then take turns reading about dragons to the five-year-old, who proceeds to tell us he's hungry, so we begrudgingly make him some toast and say something like, "I told you to eat your dinner. This is the last time." And it is. Until tomorrow. 7:45 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Felicity and I cook dinner for ourselves and the four other human locusts and eat standing around the kitchen island because we can't be bothered to set the table anymore. We eat, drink wine, and comment on the food, but this past week we've barely spoken to one another. This makes me sad, as I know it's because we are all lost in our own anxieties. I'm sure the 20-year-olds are thinking about whether their year abroad will happen at all, and my 18-year-old is lost in worried wonder as to how universities will decide who gets accepted and who doesn't without anyone having taken exams. Felicity is worried about her assistant being furloughed, if her parents are staying safe, and a thousand other things. I wonder if my very social parents are really practicing social distancing and what jobs will be available when this is over, and I know already that I most likely will have to be away for a while working on one of them to fill the coffers. But no matter how frustrated we all are with the situation, I know we can't help but think how lucky we are to have each other, a roof over our heads, food in our bellies, and no symptoms of illness. Only a couple miles away in any direction, there are hospitals chock full of ill and dying patients who are being attended to by overworked and overwhelmed National Health Service doctors, nurses, and support staff. Other than sending checks and raising money for charities and the NHS by making videos at home, we are helpless to do anything for fear of infection. As we eat in silence, we are all hoping this will end soon, without too much more suffering, that our leaders will get at least one thing right along the way, and that the next time we are all sequestered together, it is by choice. 9:15 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time. The kitchen has been cleaned by group effort, and we head our separate ways, the kids to the TV room, my wife and I to the sitting room to read. In a short while, I'll climb the stairs and head to bed, knees creaking, as I plan tomorrow night's meal. Chicken cutlets for the little kids, mushroom risotto for the rest of us. It is nearly a year since the beginning of the first lockdown, and we are now almost 6 weeks into the second. Obviously, the first one didn't work. However, it seems that people are taking things more seriously now, with a few exceptions and sticking to the rules. The vaccines are being rolled out, and the number of cases and deaths is shrinking significantly, something for which we are all thankful. During the first few weeks of this lockdown, all the kids were home, including Isabel's boyfriend, so lots of food was being bought, cooked, and consumed similarly to what is documented previously. But now, in order to preserve their sanity, Nico has returned to his flat and his mates, as he now calls his friends, in Brighton to continue university online, while Isabel and her boyfriend have retreated to his place. Only poor Camilla is stuck with me, Felicity, Matteo, and Amelia. Yet, unlike during lockdown number one, Amelia is now speaking in full sentences, although some are often completely incomprehensible, and talks almost as incessantly as her brother. Fun for all. Actually, it is. To look after her mental health, Camilla has bought a sewing machine and retreats to her room often to thread her bobbins, she says. However, I can't help but think she's probably stitching together a hot air balloon in which to sail away from us all. Can't say I blame her. I did notice that some bedsheets were missing and all our Fortnum & Mason hampers had vanished. As for Felicity and myself, we only have 5 people to cook for this time around. Gosh, it's almost too easy. Almost.